Hello, business. Right out the gate. I think it was my intro this week.
But go for it.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the Beer Jack Podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Luke.
And this is the Beer Jack Podcast, where every week we talk about the latest and greatest in beer news from New Zealand and around the world. This podcast is brought to you by Beer Jack, which is us. We are an online store based in Auckland, New Zealand, where you can buy the best beers in the country. We have exclusive imports, curated mix cases, singles, advent calendar, and more. So if you want to see what's going on with all the greatest beer from all the greatest breweries, you can find that at beerjack.co.nz. What have you been drinking this week, Luke?
I've been drinking stout.
Nice.
I've been thinking, well, we've been thinking a lot about big, thick stouts and mouthfeel and viscosity of stouts with the Christmas Small Gods beer that we've been working on and brewing. And I've been having a lot of conversations with brewers and doing a lot of reading and listening to podcasts with brewers in the Northern Hemisphere, just about how you get that really, really big, thick, syrupy body in a stout. And I've been talking to some brewers recently and thinking about that viscosity. And I've heard from some people talking about how actually having head isn't important whatsoever in a big body stout. And of course, lots of stouts have various adjuncts and oils and things that are actually inhibitors to having a head. And what they've talked about is the equivalent to lacing down a glass with an imperial stout is having that residual oil slick that you get on the side of the glass, you know, when it's sort of it clings to the side of the glass.
Yeah, so you've got that that thickness to it, and that kind of coats the inside of the glass. I mean, I'm a huge fan of a big thick head on a stout. Particularly, I always like froth over those stouts which have like a really dark kind of chocolatey colored head, where it's that kind of deep dark brown head. I think Prohibition often has that. So I saw the video of Joe Wood putting that in barrels and this kind of thick dark foam coming out. So I find that really attractive in a beer. But yeah, it's interesting that one of the things that's come up in our conversations about these thick stouts for the brew that we're doing is thinking about who in New Zealand has been doing those kind of stouts, and the level to which particularly some of the Swedish breweries that we've looked at, but also some of the American breweries, are delivering those stouts on a regular basis that we're just not seeing in New Zealand outside of one or two here and there. And George Duncan being a good example over at Duncan's has kind of started to get there to that kind of really world-class level, and with some of his latest releases. Prohibition Porter is kind of up there, but really there are very few of those big imperial stouts in New Zealand that really hit that level. There's a few who do it in the traditional way, kind of eight wide with ice stout and stuff like that, but that kind of big thick pastry stout style is something that very few New Zealand brewers have actually nailed. And it's really interesting listening to those international brewers and their techniques and how they get it done.
Prohibition Porter is, well, it's a porter, and it's such an incredible beer, possibly the best beer that comes out annually in New Zealand. But it's not an adjuncty thing like we get from Bugis, Omnipollo. And so this week I was actually drinking the Candy Squared that we've got on tap at the Fridge and Flagon.
That's the mango tonka bean coconut?
Yeah, one? I'm sure there's vanilla in there as well.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, and it's just thick. And with that, it's there's totally zero head, so perfect for those Iceman pours.
Yeah.
And it's something quite different. So yeah, with the reading, that's obviously to try and learn how we can make beers like this. And our beer's in the fermenter now, so hopefully with our techniques and recipe, we've got some way towards it, but it's a pretty high goal to aim for if you're trying to make a beer like Omnipollo and Buxton's Yellow Belly.
Yeah, and Yellow Belly's just something next level. That's their peanut butter imperial stout, which is just the most chocolatey, peanut buttery thing you've ever had. But all you jerks are going to be finding out about that around Christmas time. We've got some really exciting plans, and it's as Luke said, beer's in the fermenter, so yeah, we'll see how well our research has done and trying to pull together some of these incredible pastry beers.
Have you drank anything good this week?
Yeah, on talking about Dunkin's again, their Pina Colada Hazy, which is a pineapple coconut hazy, is fantastic. Kind of really hits the nail on the head with the Pina Colada vibe. Hopped with Sabro to get some of that coconutty, but also some coconut and pineapple adjuncts in there. And it's just one of the things, like one of the things that George Dunkin's been really nailing lately is just getting that vibe that he's talking about. Like he did it with Toasted Marshmallow Stout, and he's done it again with this Pina Colada Hazy, where it's just absolutely what you hope and expect it will be. It's, I don't think he's actually put any lactose in it. It doesn't list it on the can, but he's managed to get that big, big thick body to it, bright hoppiness, but also that kind of coconut and pineapple really singing out, and he's done a great job with that. I've been having a few Yellow Hammers, the Parrot Dog Little Hazy, which is just a nice everyday drinker. But what I've been drinking the most of is our Elvish Juice, which came out last week that we're really happy with. And that's our Grapefruit IPA collaboration with Boat Rocker. And it's a West Coast IPA. If you've listened to the podcast, you will have heard us zesting grapefruit for it on a few episodes ago. And yeah, that grapefruit kind of comes through, but it's well integrated into the beer. Bright, clean, dip hopped, which we've also talked about on the podcast, so I won't get into it again. But yeah, nice West Coast bitterness, a little bit of sweetness from the malt base, but not really. Just kind of sings out, yeah, super clean, and yeah, really pleased and proud of how that beer came out.
Well, it's been the second Small Gods beer that we've released during lockdown. So we haven't been able to have a launch event and drink it with friends. So the first one being Lucifer Share. And so I haven't chatted to many people about it, but I've chatted to maybe three or four friends that have we've posted it to in boxes or they've clicked and collect from the Fridge and Flagon. And it's been really well received so far.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember when we first... did a video chat and cracked the can simultaneously at that lunchtime, and we were just it came out exactly as we were expecting, and all our conversations with Boat Rocker about just what we loved in a West Coast IPA, and it's that dry finish that keeps you coming back for more, the grapefruit's perfectly balanced with the hops. So patting ourselves and Boat Rocker on the back, but I mean, as always, we do choose good collaboration partners to work with, so we weren't going to fail brewing our first IPA in partnership with those legends.
Yeah, it's fantastic having someone like Boat Rocker to work with, who brought so much to the table in terms of technique and hop selection and the water chemistry and a few other little tips and tricks behind the scenes with how you get that dry body, and shout out to our mates at Crafty who brewed it for us at their facility out in West Auckland. So really happy with the result there.
Yeah, and it being a double-edged sword, this world in which real life collaborations don't happen that often. So Boat Rocker were due to be coming over for Beer Vana, and we were supposed to be all mashing in together and brewing together here in Auckland. And of course, they weren't able to come over because of the virus. And it's fun all being together on a brew day and mashing out together and drinking a hot toddy. And it's just a good way to connect, because actually brewing is pretty much a one-person job. You don't need four or five people standing around helping. It is helpful to be heaving sacks and things. But generally, the nice thing about brew days is it's just good to chat and have time to really connect and talk about recipes and concepts and design.
Yeah, absolutely.
But on the flip side of that, it's kind of started a new thing of remote collaborations. And actually, this Christmas beer that we're just talking about, it's a collaboration with a brewer in another country that we probably wouldn't even have thought to ask about doing a collaboration if it weren't for this Zoom world of people doing shit remotely. Because... Yeah, why would you do it? What's the point in doing a collaboration if you're in two different countries and you've got no plans to be in the same place? Whereas it's been great to collaborate with international brewers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got you've had some really great productive chats with those brewers, and it's really nice to be sharing those kind of things. And hopefully when the world gets more back to normal, we'll be able to head over to Melbourne and do some in-person collaborations over there, head over to Sydney and see some of our mates over in Australia, and perhaps even further afield as we keep working on these Small Gods projects. But in other Small Gods news, we do have another beer that we've talked about on the podcast before, which is our 8-Wired collaboration coming out this week, which is really exciting to be finally kind of pulling that out from under the hat, which is a Belgian amber ale brewed with dates and palm sugar called Three on a Match.
Yeah, really quite a traditional beer. So there's, I suppose, in the same way that Elvis Juice is really quite traditional West Coast IPA, and the grapefruit really is there as a note to complement the hops. And yeah, you're not really going to taste those adjunct sugars in the beer, so I don't think we'll be making a big song and dance about it. But certainly if you were to try the beer without the dates and the palm sugar, and then with it, it adds something for certain nuance and complexity that they're going to bring to the brew.
Yeah, well, it's about depth, and it's about creating those kind of elements which do come from the malt character and come from the yeast esters that you're going to get those kind of flavors anyway. But it's adding a kind of a broader flavor profile to that. But yeah, it's called Three on a Match, as we said, which is based around a legend from World War One, or kind of a superstition, more like it, which is that in the trenches during World War One, there was a superstition that you didn't want to be the third man on a match. The soldiers had a lot of cigarettes, but very few matches, so matches had to be shared. And the story goes that if you were the first one on the match, you lit your cigarette, which notified a sniper that you were there. The second man on the match gives the sniper time to aim. And the third man on the match is when he takes the shot.
Mm.
And we came to that name and that story because we were thinking about, we're brewing with 8-Wired, so we were thinking about wire and stuff related to their name, and Belgian and a brown ale, and so barbed wire and the brown muddy fields of World War One in the trenches, and that kind of brought in Flanders in Belgium, and that kind of brought us around to that story, which is just a kind of a poignant little morbid piece of superstition from a very crazy time.
Yeah, so it's more about human superstition rather than deities, which is a nice angle to take with Small Gods collaborations. And it's a mud brown can, and it's Belgian ambers probably aren't that sexy or exciting, but that's the joy of what we do, that we brew these small batches, and it doesn't need to be your latest hype pastry stout that people are going to be queuing up over. But I think none of us have tried it yet. It's going to be ready this week or possibly early next week. But yeah, based on the recipe we created together, it's, and also again talking about our amazing collaborators, 8-Wired.
Yeah, we're working with Sauron, have they?
So it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, and it is like, while lately we have brewed a few of the more popular styles with our grapefruit IPA and the pastry stout that we've just been talking about, part of the joy of what we've been doing with Small Gods and what we'll continue to do is bringing these kind of unsexy, historical, yet delicious beers out to, because one of the reasons we started doing this is because there's so much beer out there that people just aren't brewing because it's not the most commercial. It's not the biggest hype, and we just want to be bringing out interesting stuff and the stuff that tastes great, rather than necessarily what's popular and what's going to set the Twitter sphere or Untappd on fire. We're just like, we want to brew beers that we want to drink.
Yeah, the stuff that we want to drink. That's exactly it. And there's a few people out there that are like us. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I've been rating pizzas.
Why have you been doing that?
I was inspired by, I don't know if you ever read the book Freakonomics or
yes.
the podcast.
Yeah.
On the podcast a few years ago, they did a whole episode about this woman who went on the cheeseburger and fries diet and she lost weight and got healthier. And the...
Sounds like my kind of diet.
So the whole thing was, the Freakonomics angle was that she ate cheeseburger and fries 3 times a week. And she got healthier, and the spoiler is that she realized that if she was going to be eating all this crap, she had to eat healthily for all of her other meals. So as much as it sounds like a lot 3 times a week, that's only one of, 27 meals in a week?
I mean, I've had cheeseburger and fries 3 times in the last 4 days, so...
So if you're eating... healthy breakfast, healthy lunch. She started doing a bit of exercise, so she ended up being healthier than she...
I'm not doing any of those things.
But what captured my attention was at the start of the episode, she talked about she lived in this, you know, small city in the US, and she'd always be talking to friends and family, and they'd be like, nah, you've got to go to this place. They've got the greatest cheeseburger. And she thought, well, that's crap. Because no one's been to all of the cheeseburger joints. And people have probably been to 3 or 4. And then they find the one they like and they just keep going there. And they tell everyone it's the best cheeseburger in town. But it's not. So I got thinking about margarita pizzas.
Yeah.
My girlfriend and I have determined a point system out of 100 to deter completely subjective criteria. To determine which is the best pizza joint, mainly based on margarita pizza. So
you got a standard baseline to measure everyone against, and
yeah. But already we're seeing that it may be slightly tricky, and there's a whole bunch of pizzerias that are just gonna count themselves out of the race to begin with.
Well, yeah, it depends on what the pizza's trying to do. Like, I mean, a lot of the way I rate a pizza is based on the volume of toppings.
How heavy is a slice?
Yeah, and that's why McLeod's actually, for my money, is maybe the best pizza in New Zealand, up at the Pizza Barn in Waipu.
That's a heavy slice of pizza.
It's a heavy slice of pizza. They load you up, and it's it's like, oh, you want chicken on this pizza? Have a whole chicken. Such generous portions and delicious, but
the Matt eats yeah. more is more philosophy to food.
It's more is more philosophy to pretty much everything, but the margarita is somewhere McLeod's might not perform in the category at which I think they deserve recognition. Though I haven't had them at their margarita pizza because, as you know, more is more, so it might be fantastic.
Well, that's it. You've got to judge a pizza joint by the margaritas. That's the, you know, it's the classy option. It's the quality of the ingredients. So obviously on the rankings, there's 20 points to the base. There's 10 points to the sauce, 10 points to the cheese, 10 points to basil. Does it even have basil? And I think a lot of pizza joints, they have a margarita as just the blandest thing on the menu.
Yeah.
For fussy eaters that don't like flavour, or for children, in the same way that a lot of ice cream places, weirdly, vanilla just means plain ice cream. Whereas vanilla is the greatest flavour on earth.
Yeah.
Vanilla is the best flavour on earth.
You want it to taste like vanilla?
Yeah. Any listeners that disagree with that can just get in the bin. And cheap ice cream, it just is. It's ice cream flavoured sugar ice cream. So we went to... Pizza Boys with a Z, with 3 Zs, in New Lynn. And their margarita, we rated them 54 out of a possible 100. It wasn't a bad experience necessarily, it's just the margarita was very bland. There was, and it didn't have any basil on it. It had a sprinkling of dried oregano, but basil is an ingredient in margarita pizzas.
So 0 out of 10 on your basil points?
0 for basil.
I don't think the points you've dictated add up to 100 yet, so I'm curious to hear what the remaining categories are.
There's points for ease of ordering. I thought maybe that gets 10 points.
Yeah.
Because that affects the whole experience, right?
does.
So they got 10 for that. We also vibe, which is quite a vague, purposefully vague category, because sometimes we might sit in, sometimes it might be takeaway. So vibe can include anything from the graphic design on the pizza boxes, the interaction with the waiter or waitress. And the sides gets a few points as well. So generally we'll order a margarita plus a second pizza will be the most interesting pizza, like the house speciality, which in this case with Pizza Boys was a peri-peri paneer pizza.
Oh, interesting.
That was a hefty slice. They heaped on the paneer. Nice bit of spice to it.
You'll love a paneer.
Yep. So I would recommend Pizza Boys for that. They have three different paneer options. So you should go and check them out. It's near your area out west.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like worth checking out. Though I'm curious about this cheeseburger blog now. I actually used to have a cheeseburger blog when I lived in Melbourne and had a similar similar campaign to try every burger. Well, actually, because I was a traveling sales rep at the time, so I was being sent to basically all the cities in Australia, Brisbane, Adelaide, Sydney, Perth.
And listeners, I need to interrupt there. Matt was a traveling salesman for a micro scooter company before micro scooters got more popular and had little engines in them. I'm just imagining you just in your business suit, just turning up to a meeting and having just a briefcase just full of tiny micro scooters falling out of it.
It was a polo shirt, thank you very much. I had a mission to basically when I was traveling to these cities, traveling for work gets by yourself gets very old very quickly. Even though it sounds pretty good, so I had a expense budget, and basically every meal I would, before I went on my trip, I'd do my map of my route for all the toy shops and sports shops that I was going to visit. And then I'd also map out all the burger places, so like find all the burger blogs for the city and all the different burger joints, and put those on the map as well, so I could like, all right, I'm going to stop for lunch here, and then that one's close to my hotel, so I'm going to go there for dinner, and then throughout Melbourne trying to find all the best ones as well. So I can appreciate the journey to find the ultimate burger.
Well, I'll keep you updated on the best pizza, although, as I say, it's being completely subjective. I think my idea of a perfect pizza is going to be quite different to yours. To begin with, there's probably a lot of meat on your perfect pizza.
I don't like, except for McLeod's, who just do it perfectly. I'm fairly restrained on my pizza ordering. It's like a pepperoni mushroom. A big old mushroom pizza is the way to go for me.
I had I ate a kind of fungi this week, which I wasn't into.
That sounds mysterious.
Yeah. I did some ordering during lockdown from a Mexican speciality store called Ay Caramba. Hilariously.
Oh, yeah?
So bought loads of tortillas and refried beans and hot sauces and things. And they had this a can of stuff that I didn't recognise that was called corn truffle.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is this really niche speciality that basically is almost unknown outside of Mexico. Even in the southern USA, it's not popular there at all. And it's a kind of fungus that infects ears of corn.
Yeah.
And looks disgusting. It just looks like a grey, mouldy, misshapen ear of corn. And it's a delicacy in some parts of Mexico. So I bought a can of this stuff and had it in burritos this week. And to begin with, it's kind of like it's black and it's kind of like chopped mushrooms in sauce. But then as I got for the burrito, it became kind of gross. It had like the sort of the sweetness of sweet corn and like a powdery. So I'll be keen to try corn truffle again, but probably fresh and not from a can.
Interesting. Never tried it, so don't have anything to add there.
Well, talking of McLeods, I was thinking about them this week. I was actually reminded of the first time we ever bought beer from McLeods. Strangely, I was in my kitchen listening to a Björk album on I've just got a little
Is that strangely for you?
No. It was the connection that listening to Björk made me think of McLeods.
Right.
So I was listening to Vornica, and then I went out and put on my headphones and just continued playing the album as I went for a walk. And I put the headphones on, and just immediately I was just overwhelmed, just sensory overwhelmingness of just the beauty of the musical arrangement of this album. And the album had just been sort of in the background just while I was just doing some washing up and stuff in the kitchen. And I put it on, and it was like I was just in there amongst the orchestra, and it was just such a completely different experience. And I just thought to myself immediately, well, why does Björk even allow people to listen to her music on crappy little speakers? She should force people to listen to them on high-end sound systems.
Or have DRM in there, say, like, nope, your headphones aren't good enough.
Yeah, or $500 headphones. And I do have very good headphones. It's the Sony ones. It's one of the most expensive things I own. And it immediately made me think about the first time, which was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, that we bought some beer from McLeod's. And I got a call from Jason, the head brewer. Just immediately, I just emailed through saying, can we order these and these? And he called me up and he said, hey, Luca, what are your plans with my beer? And I said, oh, we're a shop. We're going to sell it on the internet. And he said, yep, but tell me how, like, specifically, what's going to happen when the beer arrives at your warehouse? I said, oh, well, yeah. It'll arrive with us. It will go into our big chiller. And we're sending it out as part of a pale ale mixed case. So people order the next day and the day after that. We're going to bundle it up into these mixed boxes and send on overnight couriers to our customers. He said, oh, yep, okay, yeah, I'll get the beer dispatched in our refrigerated truck.
Yeah, I remember having a similar conversation with Jason back when I was at Brothers and ordered McLeod's beer for the first time. And a brewery that's very particular about, rightly so, about how their beer is stored and displayed, and because they have a policy of not selling to anyone who doesn't store it refrigerated.
Mm. And I suppose a little bit, well, quite similar to Jamie at Cell Division.
Yeah.
And of course he can be so particular because he was brewing like 50 litre batches or something stupid.
Yeah.
So he only had a few bottles to go around anyway, but he treated those bottles so preciously. And when we had the Beer Jerk Bunker bar, he'd allow us to buy some bottles for the bunker, but he wouldn't allow us to sell it online. And I had a chat with him, and he just said he wanted to make sure his beer was being served in the right environment with people that could answer questions about his beer, and he didn't want it to be sent to just anybody on the internet. Yeah. And fair enough, when he's only producing a few hundred bottles, he can absolutely choose that his beer is only going to be served at the Beer Jerk bar, at the Port Cider, and just you know, a handful of really niche bars around the country where it is going to be treated with its due respect, I suppose, by the servers and by the drinkers.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's... I don't think he's even producing anything at the moment. He's taking a bit of a break. There are breweries out there who are, rightly so, particular about how their beer gets drunk.
Yeah, and it's fair enough. It's, you know, their products. I did notice that Jamie's done a collaboration with Wilderness recently. I saw some pictures online of them making a no-boil ale that they've filtered through straw.
I saw them working on something, but so we're interested to see what... I don't know if that's out yet, but interested to see what comes of it.
Yeah, we'll have to get in touch because, of course, Wilderness does some amazing beers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you been homebrewing?
I haven't. I've been. I've got my APA and my spiced rum quad on, and don't really have any more space at the moment. I'll borrow again in maybe next week, as I managed to chop through the APA a little bit. But I'm having issues with my tap system at the moment, which is a bit of a pain in the ass. I've got an intermittent gas leak.
Huh.
So I've got my CO2 bottle hooked up to my kegs, and I went in one day and noticed that the pressure was low on it. It's an issue that I've had in the past where I haven't quite done up the regulator connection to the gas bottle tight enough, and I've leaked out a whole bottle of CO2, which is super dangerous and worrying and expensive. But yeah, I've found that I turned it off, tightened everything up, turned it back on, and everything seemed fine. And then the pressure just dropped to zero a couple of minutes later. Mm. So I've been kind of trying to isolate where that's coming from, but it seems to hold pressure for a while and then suddenly lose it. So I think I must have a dodgy seal somewhere, but I can't find it because it's not consistently leaking, which is annoying.
I wonder if you can take it to Bock and get it serviced, or even if they'll swap it in.
Well, I don't know. The thing is, I don't even know if it's the... I don't think it's the bottle. But I suspect it's in one of the kegs. One of the keg seals might be gone. Mm. But... or it's in the fitting to the couplers. And so my brother-in-law is a plumber and gas fitter. So when he's allowed to come over again, I'm just going to get him to come and have a look. And obviously I can't really do much with the kegs because they've got beer in them. And I don't want to waste the beer. So at the moment I've just got the gas turned off and the kegs uncoupled. And when I want to pour a beer, I turn the gas on, couple the keg up, pour the beer, and then uncouple it all again. So at least I'm not leaking gas and potentially killing my whole family. So,
well, maybe you could just submerge all of your taps and kegs and everything in a jumbo washing up bowl of water, like when you got a puncher on your push bike.
And look for bubbles. I just need to get one that's what, 4 feet high,
the size of a room.
Yeah. So yeah, haven't brewed anything yet. Taking suggestions on what I should brew next. I might brew a hazy because it's been a while since I brewed one of those at home.
A bit basic,
and I'm never happy with my home-brewed hazies. I do my best to eliminate oxygen, but my equipment just isn't good enough. I'm planning on upgrading my fermenter so I can do pressure transfers, upgrading my dry hopping technique so I'm not opening the vessel and stuff, but I'd also like to brew something a bit more interesting, but also something drinkable. So it might be that other table beer I've been talking about, or something else. So write me a suggestion in the members group if you think I should brew something. Otherwise, I'll be having a think about that and putting a recipe together soon.
Maybe you should brew a raspberry Berliner Weisse.
Good for summer. But why would I when Miss Pinky's so good?
Miss Pinky's really good.
It is really good.
The sun was shining as I strolled home from Beer Jack Towers last week, and I just thought, screw it, I'm going to drink it on my stroll. And I had such a nice walk home. Just smashing that beautiful Berliner Weisse with tons of raspberries. It's so raspberry-y.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So, as my constant thing, like, if you make a beer taste of a thing, make a taste of it. And
more is more.
Miss Pinky definitely just kind of sings out with raspberry. So, Miss Pinky is our beer of the week for this week from Boat Rocket. So, Boat Rocket is who we brewed our Elvis Juice collaboration that we talked about at the top of the episode. It's fantastic. It's just 3.5%, like, bright spritzy carbonation, punchy tartness. I think for my palate, a lot of kettle sours don't take it quite far enough on the sourness. And they're trying to make it approachable, but they lose some of that kind of zing and punch that really makes them work for me. I think Miss Pinky is one that has it. Garage Project White Mischief is one that kind of dials it up just the right amount. And I think the best ones kind of push that sourness just a little bit further than the average currently is. It's just such a bright, flavorful, refreshing beer. It's lovely.
Yeah, and it's brewed in the traditional way. For 500 years, brewers have made kettle sours. And I think for a lot of people that are maybe getting into beer and they're discovering different kinds of sour. So of course there's kettle sour and then there's wild fermentation. So two quite different processes. And I think it's quite easy for people to look at them both and think one is cheap, fast and easy and one dimensional, being kettle sour. And then wild fermentation in barrels and fooders being the very time consuming one that takes years and gives you many more layers. But it's not as black and white as that. As I say,
it's not.
Berliner Weisses and Gozes have been made for 500 years and they are kettle soured. So they're made with strains of lactobacillus. So you can certainly get a really fantastic complexity out of a kettle sour. It's just that most of the fruity sours that are on the market, that they are cheap and fast. And that's kind of what people want. You want a refreshing, slightly tart beer that tastes a bit of fruit. And
it is one of those things where the quantity of fruit and the freshness of the fruit and the realness of the fruit makes a big difference.
The realness, that's major.
The realness. And it's, I think, an area where I know that some breweries take some shortcuts. And because it's expensive and it's a pain in the ass to deal with to put hundreds of kilos of real fruit in your beer.
We know.
we know. But it gets you the best result. And you can really tell this is, it's hundreds of kilos of fresh raspberries have gone into this beer, which is why it tastes so much like raspberry and really kind of delivers on that promise.
Yep, really beautiful layered summery beer. I think, is it 3.4%?
Yeah, I said 3.5. It's something around there, in the mid-3s.
It's exactly what you want to be drinking in the sunshine.
But talking of Australian beer, as Luke mentioned, hinted at earlier on in the episode, some beer from the other side is arriving. So that is Other Side Brewing over in Perth, Western Australia. And we've got our latest shipment from them. It has landed and it is currently clearing customs. So it should be with us this week. And we've got a fantastic mix case coming from them. Mm. A mixture of core range beers and some of their special seasonal releases. We've got stuff like a red double IPA. There's a pastry stout. They've got a hazy that they brewed specially for Beervana, which we managed to get some packaged. They've got the stuff like their core range is really good. They've got an XPA, IPA, a citrus mid, a few other special treats in there. So keep an eye out for that. We'll be releasing the mix case when the beers arrive. And they're a really highly rated brewery. I'm doing some really great stuff. You may have tried their Garage Project collaboration, Bubbles, which was released probably 6-9 months ago, something like that.
Longer, maybe.
It was actually released around the time of our last Boat Rock Other Side import. It was a nice coincidence that that beer launched the same week that our shipment arrived.
And we've only imported Other Side once before, haven't we?
Yeah. So that would have been last Christmas, actually, around this time. So it would have been about a year ago when but it would have been 9 months ago when that Bubbles came out. Keep an eye out for that, because a really cool brewery doing some really interesting stuff. They've got a boosted Hefeweizen in there and a caramel brown ale.
Ooh, that sound up my street.
Peach session ale and a big West Coast double IPA. So yeah, it's going to be a really cool box. And I think we've gone for a mixed dozen with them. So yeah, it's going to be a really nice dozen different beers for around about $100. I need to get onto doing the pricing for that today. So you'll find out how much it is when it comes out.
Well, hopefully that gets processed through the docks as soon as possible and gets into our warehouse. Because
absolutely.
Really keen to be trying those.
Yeah.
And in other news, Beer Jerk is hiring.
We are.
I know we have many people listening to this podcast. So if you'd like to work at Beer Jerk or know anyone else that might want to work at Beer Jerk, get in touch or tell them to get in touch.
Yeah, it's like it's if you join us in the office, it's like listening to this podcast all day, every day, because me and Luke do not stop talking.
About historic German beer styles.
Yeah, classic. But we've got a bunch of roles going. We've got some stuff in the warehouse. We've got some stuff in the office. We've got some stuff in our venue, the Fridge and Flagon. There's a whole bunch of interesting, different, challenging stuff that we need done. We've got some great staff members who are leaving. We've got various personal reasons. So
not because they hate us.
Not because they hate us. Not that they've told us anyway. there's some new roles as well as stepping into some existing roles. So if that sounds a bit like you, you can get in touch and we can chat about what's available.
Yeah, yeah. We need a great person to run the warehouse. We need someone to run the venue now that Rose is off on maternity leave. And someone that's just an organised person that's good at admin would be great to meet. So, yeah. Hopefully get in touch, and this time next week we'll have met some great people.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to beers. We've got some great mixed cases available on the website right now. Our advent calendar is available for pre-sale, so that is what we think is the best box of beer that we do every year. It's 24 different beers from 24 breweries from all around the world. We've got exclusive imports, beers that have been brewed just for the calendar, and that is extremely limited. There's only a few hundred boxes of that. So if you want to get your hands on that and have the best experience of December that you possibly can, then those pre-orders are available on the website now. We have a few other mixed cases available as well. We've got two new boxes of dessert beers. So one of them is a bunch of fruity dessert beers, and one of them is kind of more your dark kind of chocolatey pastry stouts. And I think Luke's been doing, as you said at the top of this episode, a lot of research into those pastry stouts, so you can you know that he's been looking for the very best ones to go in that box.
Also thinking about the advent calendar, so we will have another version of the advent calendar coming out probably in the next week, which is the for want of a better word, the budget one. So that's it's a lot cheaper than our classic one, and it contains beers that are more commonly available. So still great beers, but cheaper beers that you can get more easily. Whereas
the vibe we go for with that one is kind of we go for our favourite beers that are always available. So looking at your more of your core range beers, but and we go for as many different breweries as we can in that box. But
it's great fun.
It's great fun, and yeah, you're talking about stuff like no guarantees that this specifically will be in the box, but McLeod's Paradise is one of my examples. Is that's probably one of my favourite beers. It's definitely up there among the best pale ales in New Zealand, and it's kind of that thing where we're like, no, this is absolutely great. It's the top tier examples of great core range beers, but it's not going to be the same kind of rare and exclusive stuff that you see in the other box.
Yeah, you're probably going to get beers like Epic Armageddon in there. It's you're probably going to get like Dunkin's Yum Yum Yuzu, just these great classics. Whereas the one that is speedily selling out is we try to have 24 beers from 24 breweries in 24 styles, but we never market that because it's such a difficult challenge we set ourselves. And a lot of the beers are brewed just for the calendar, and a lot are imported just for our calendar. So we've been doing this for years now, and every year people get FOMO, and December comes round and people are like, oh my God, have you got any more cans of this beer? No, we don't.
No.
It's just in the calendar. So if you don't want to have that FOMO and be that whinging person come December the 2nd, when everyone else is drinking something pretty incredible, then get in there fast before it sells out.
Yeah, definitely. We've got two other new mix cases available on the website right now as well. We've got a our big sippers box, which is kind of big, strong, kind of warming ales, imperial stouts, double IPAs, along those lines.
TV beers. Also, that's it's an amazing selection, actually. Just if you're the sort of person that likes to drink one beer in a night and nurse it for an hour or two, the big sippers is exactly what you're after.
Yeah. And then for all you real beer jerks, we've got the Kiwi Belgians box. Mm. The great examples of Belgian beer styles from Kiwi breweries. So you think your doubles, triples, quads, Belgian golden ale, stuff like that. So
Saison.
Saison, yeah. So if you love your Belgian beer styles, check that one out.
And that brings it to an end. Anything to add, Matt?
No, I think that's about it. So if you want to find out more about Beer Jerk, obviously check out our website at beerjerk.co.nz. You can find us on social media at The Beer Jerk on Facebook, at Beer Jerk NZ on Instagram. But most importantly, find us in our Facebook members group at NZ Beer Jerks, where you can join us, have chats about beers, post pictures and reviews, and see what else our members are up to. And that's the best way to get involved with the Beer Jerk community.
Thanks for tuning in. Until next time. Cheers.
See ya.